session number 24730, real one.
Mr. Paul Boxall, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Boxall?
Yes, I was born in Bromley, Kent, at 57 Nicol Lane, and I was born on the 17th of November 1922.
And could you tell us a bit about your childhood in Bromley and your family? What sort of background
yes,
you came
the
from?
Family. There were four girls and me, two older girls and two younger girls, a mother and father. My father had worked, had been in the army before the First World War, served all through the First World War, and then came out and became a bricklayer. And he was a master bricklayer. All the family were bricklayers, builders. They were very good at it. I went to the Bromley National School, or the Bramley St Mary's Infant School to start off with, and then on to the Bromley National School, which was what they call a secondary modern school now, but it was a church National School.
How did you do at school, too?
I was usually at the top of the class or very near the top of the class. And I left.
Anything you were particularly good at?
No, not really. No, I was sort of all round it. I didn't mind. I liked sport. I played football for the school. But of course, we didn't have all the facilities that they have nowadays. You were lucky to go down to the recreation ground one afternoon a week. But one of the peculiarities was on Holy Week, the whole school used to march down from, or used to parade in the school playground and march down to the Bromley Church for a service every morning, and then march back again. That taught me a bit about marching about with a great load of people.
What were you planning to do when you left school?
Well, when I left school, I went to...
What age were you? Were you 14 or...?
14, yeah. I left school in December at Christmas, 19, whatever it was. It'll take a bit of working out now.
1936, probably.
I'd been scorer for a cricket team, and the chap who ran it was fairly well up in James Young's, which was a coach building firm in... Bromley, which used to build Rolls-Royce cars and I don't know what. And so I got a job there in the stores.
And what exactly were you doing? Can you tell us a bit about what your duties were?
Yes, it was mainly looking after the stores, issuing out screws, bolts, nuts. They were building a Rolls-Royce, they had hides and cloth all matched. And they were kept for that certain job, and you had to make sure that they went out for that job. It was quite interesting to see a car built. They used to come in with just a chassis, with the driver with his goggles on and his hat turned backwards, driving this chassis of Rolls Royce, and then you'd see it gradually built up into a car, and beautiful cars.
So you enjoyed the work?
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. But I'd always said I was going to be a soldier.
Now, what was your interest in it? Where did that come from?
In what?
Why were you interested in being a soldier?
My father had been a soldier. And I'd always said that I was going to be a soldier. And then when I was nearly 16, I decided that was it. I was going to go. My cousin had gone into the army on a scheme that was supplementary reserve, and they did 6 months training and then came out on reserve for 5 years. And he was at the depot at Britannia Barracks and came home on leave, and so I decided that I would join the Royal Norfolk Regiment because I would then know someone at the depot.
So what was the procedure for joining up? How did you go about joining?
I went to the local drill hall in Bromley. Saw the recruiting sergeant there. He then sent me across to sent me across to where the God, I can't think of the name of it. Anyway, he sent me across to this place, and I went over and went to the recruiting office there. I'll remember the name of it in a minute.
It's all right. What happened at the recruiting?
I was checked over, had a medical, did a little examination.
What kind of a medical and what kind of examination?
Well, you're seen by a doctor and you strip off and he tests your heart and cough and everything else that goes on with soldiers when they have a medical. Of course, it was all strange to me. And then I had to sit and do a little test, right, and a bit of English and a bit of maths and things like that.
I presume that was reasonably easy for you.
Yes, that wasn't difficult. And then they said, right, we'll let you know. And that got 3 weeks later that I came home from work on a Friday night and I said to my mother, if I nothing in the post tomorrow, I'll get on to Woolwich, was the place. Princess Street, Woolwich. I said, I'll get on to Woolwich and find out what's happening. And I went to the pictures, came home about 9 o'clock, and my mother said, there's a card on the table for you. And there'd been a late post, because the post used to come late then. And I picked this card up, and it said, report to Princess Street, Woolwich for attestation on Tuesday.
And what was the date, or month?
Tuesday, well, it was November. It was November, because I joined up on the 8th of November, 38. I've got my attestation paper here.
Now, what happened at the attestation?
Well, you go in. Once again, they give you a medical. You swear to abide by all the rules. And then they give you a king shilling, then. And a railway warrant and said, report to Britannia Barracks, Norwich. Well, I'd been to London from Bromley, but I'd never been anywhere outside of London. And to go to Norwich was like coming to a foreign blooming land. I mean, you almost needed a passport to come up here. But I got up into London, got the train from Liverpool Street Station. And I can remember now, there were two chaps on it who were in a carriage with me. They were RA people who had just come home from India and were on their way to the old RA barracks, which was at the foot of the bottom of the hill.
Nelson
barracks. They were on their way there. So when I got to Norwich Station, there was no one there. So I asked someone, you know, where to go, and they told me. And I walked along Riverside Road and up to the guard room at Britannia Barracks, looked at it and thought, shall I turn around and go home? Then I thought, no, I'll go in.
Is
I
it
went
a bit,
in.
A bit forbidding, then?
Well, it is, yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know whether you've seen that guard room when the entrance to it. It wasn't the best place to look at. But I went in, and they took me over to the room where all the boys were. There were about 16 boys, I think, and the Lance Corporal in charge. And he apologised and said, you know, that they'd been given the wrong time of train, and otherwise there wouldn't be someone there to meet me.
Now, you were joining as a boy, a recruit.
Yeah.
How did they, you know, you arrived as a civilian lad.
Yeah.
How did they sort of kit you out and get, you know, and well, what sort of medical inspections?
Didn't have a medical inspection. The next day, the first night, they bed you down and make sure you've got, you know, look after you and see that you know what to do. And then the next morning, you go across to the QM stores and they give you all the kit. Everything.
What did you get? Got a
service dress, which then was one with a button-up collar done right up, trousers. We did have long putties issued, but we only wore long putties with our denims. But you get all the lot. The only thing that is issued was a great coat and your equipment. All the rest is issued to you, but then you get a kit allowance, and you had to buy whatever. If you lost anything, you bought it. Like, if you wanted a pair of boots, you didn't get them issued, you had to buy them. You go across there, they then kit you out, go back to the barrack room. They show you how to put your service desk under your bed in cardboard to fresh it. There were no such things as irons or anything like that. No such things as hot running water. We had a...
What were the barrack rooms like? Were you in a boys' squad?
Yeah.
Do you know the number or...?
No. There were just 16 boys, and we were in. We had a room of our room of our own.
So what was the barrack room like?
It was a T-shaped barrack room, with beds either side, an iron stove in the middle of the floor, and an iron receptacle for coal or coke, whatever was issued. A polished floor, and you had to polish the floor. You had to make your bed up every day, and it was a bit of a shock from civilian life, but you soon get used to it.
If we look at a typical day of your training, that sort of gives us a lot of an idea. What time would your day start in the morning?
Well, Rivalli was 6:30, and you got up then, you washed and shaved, and then you went across and had breakfast.
Now, that brings us to one. What was army food like?
Then it was fairly good. It was, we didn't have army catering corps. We had our own regimental cooks. And regimental cooks always were very good because they always entered competitions, and it was sort of a bit of a kudos for the cook sergeant if his cooks won something in the army competitions.
So what sort of thing in 1938 would you get for breakfast, 39?
Oh, there'd be porridge. I don't think you got cornflakes, it was porridge, and there'd be sort of bacon and sausage and perhaps fried egg, bread and butter,
so
bread
good,
and marge.
A good solid
good start,
and
yeah.
Plenty of it.
Yeah, And there was a menu, but there was a menu for the week, and you knew exactly what you were going to get. I mean, the lunch probably was, we'd probably get rabbit stew, plum duff or something like that for sweet. There was always good. What's that? Mid morning you used to be able to get a mug of tea, and then in the afternoon you get tea in the afternoon, which would be sort of bread and butter and jam and anything like that.
So food good.
Food was good, yeah. Generally,
after breakfast, what would happen then?
Well, then you go back to your room, get it all cleaned up and tidied, and
tell me how much effort would you spend on cleaning your barrack room? Were they really strict?
Oh, yes, yeah. We had bumpers, what they called bumpers. And they used to put polish down on the floor, and then they'd bump them with these bumpers. And then you had bits of blanket that went under the bumper to polish the floor. And, oh, yes, it was... I've seen them down on their hands and knees polishing the floor before now.
What about the stove? I mean, in some places you have to polish a stove.
The stoves had to be black-leaded and clean. And I mean, you couldn't, there was no good having ash in it, because first thing the officer did when he came around was looked at the ash and looked in the fire to see if there was any dust or dirt in it. All this rubbish about whitewashing coal and that's a load of old hogwash. I never saw that at all. But
Would you have to polish your coal scuttle, though?
I mean, the coal scuttle, it wasn't a coal scuttle, it was a sort of a metal tub. And that had to be black-leaded the same as the stove.
But nothing too silly, though?
No, it wasn't... They didn't do things just to make it blooming awkward. They did things to make it clean.
So you clean your barrack room.
Yep, and then after that, you go out on parade, perhaps do drill parade.
Well, let's do drill. How did you take to basic foot drill? You know.
Well, you learn it. There were 16 of us, and you soon pick up the drill. It's not difficult.
It's not difficult for some, but some people.
Well, some people it is. Some people, I know. Some people, I mean, they can't march, not if you... Well, they've got a hole in their head. I was going to say something else, but I better not. It depends on the way you look at things. I mean, I always looked on it, the fact that I could do the drill, and I was going to do it the best as I could.
You enjoyed it?
Oh, yes, yeah. And then
you... What was it you enjoyed? Can you, you know, just give us...
Well, you enjoy the regimentation of it. You enjoy doing things together. I mean, when the instructor shouts halt and you all stop at the same time, it's good. If you're straggled to a halt and it's a bloody shambles, it isn't enjoyable.
As a 16-year-old lad, or, well, yeah, 16, yeah. Did you understand the point of drill then? I'm sure you did later on, but, I mean, did you know then why you had to do so much drill?
Well, yes, it was to instill in you to, if someone said do, you did. That was the idea of drill. I mean, that was the same with battle drill. You learnt to do, and when someone said move, you moved.
So that's one session you might have. What about weapons training?
We didn't do any weapon training, not on us boys.
None at all?
No, none at all, because some of them were going to be MT, were going to go into the MT, and the others were going to go into the band or drums. And you didn't do it, and band and drums then were stretcher bearers, were first aid people. They didn't do run around with rifles on their shoulders. You did everything else.
What other training sessions might you have?
Well, you did education.
Is this for the third sector? Third class?
Well, when I joined up, I went on the first education session, and there was a corporal who took education then. They didn't have anything. And he said to me, right, do these papers. And I did these papers. He said, right, here's a regimental history book. Read that up and you'll sit in your third class education certificate next week. So I did, sat that and passed it.
And to you it was easy, obviously.
Well, it was, yeah, it wasn't a difficult exam. I passed that quite easily. So.
Did you then go on to study straight away for your second?
No. After that, by that time it was just near Christmas. We were due to go home on leave, and of course we came back from leave, and immediately went down to.
I'll come on to that. Now, this reading the regimental history, it brings me on to something. Were they sort of inculcating you, sort of bringing in, you know, this real feeling that you were a Royal Golfer?
Oh yes,
part, even though you were from Kent.
Yeah, you were part of the family. It's always been, even now. I mean, we were part of the family. The adjutant when I was RSM, he finished up as a Major General, Sir David Thorne, and Lady Thorne. I still see Lady Thorne, and she says, you're part of our family, Mr. Boxall.
How did they get that feeling going when you were a boy, you know, because you were from Kent. You
well, yeah, no. It was just one of those things. I mean, they instilled in you that the regiment was a regiment, anyone who said a word against the regiment, you weren't very popular.
Were the battle honours, you know, the regimental, was that important to you? I mean, did you study
yes.
what went
well,
on?
Oh, yes. Well, it was important that you knew, you know, what happened and and how the regiment was formed and things like that. It was all instilling into you a sense of pride in the regiment, and we've had that ever since.
What other training would you have as a boy?
Well, not until I got out there to India to the band, when we started band training.
So,
at the depot,
Paris,
it was just drill and education, PT, getting your fit.
Tell me about that. Was that? What sort of PT were you doing?
Well, it was the normal things, you know, jumping about and flapping your arms around and jumping over horses and boxes and things like that. And there was no, we didn't do much cross-country running or anything like that, no. It was in the gymnasium most of the time.
Did it improve your physique?
Oh, yes, yeah, glad you got your fit.
No route marches then?
No, not then. They came later on.
How did you get on with the other boys?
All right. There was always... most of them we got on well with. They, you know, we were all boys together because we weren't allowed to mix with the men. I mean, on boys' service, you weren't allowed to... You almost had to stand to attention and talk to a private soldier and anything else. So...
Were they all from the same sort of background as you? Or?
Yeah, some of them were from military... Some of them had their fathers had been in the regiment, and they'd come into the regiment. Others had come, you know, like I had from Civvy Street. As I say, that, you know, we were a group.
And no bullying?
No bullying, no. No, we wouldn't. As I've always said, that it's the senior NCOs who look after that, and if they don't, there's something wrong.
And what about the instructors? How did you get on with them? What was their attitude towards it? What was their method of training you?
Well, I mean, they obviously shouted at you and made sure that you did what you were told, but they were always, could I say, fatherly to the boys. I mean, they didn't mistreat us or anything like that. They always looked after us.
Were you in the same squad as Farrow? It was about that time.
Yes, I think he was at the Devil at the same time.
Ernie Farrow.
Yeah.
What was he like? Because we saw him as a very fairly elderly chap.
You know? Yeah.
What was he like as a boy?
Well, I think he was... we were all very much the same. I mean, we were all... obviously, we volunteered, so we were interested in the army. Most of us were interested in playing sports of some sort or the other. If we'd have had a chance, we would have wanted to fire rifles, but we didn't get a chance because they didn't think that was the sort of thing boys should do. As I say, you know, we're a group.
So, anything else about your time, you know...
At the depot?
You were coming up to Christmas, you said.
Yes, we went home on Christmas leave, had 7 days leave for Christmas.
Were you in uniform when you
went home? Yeah, you couldn't wear civilian clothes. You had to go in uniform. I went home for Christmas leave, came back, and as I say, I came back just after Christmas. We had 7 days leave. And the Tuesday after getting back, we went down to Bulford to get Guadalupe Barracks ready for the 2nd Battalion coming home.
Bulford, I don't think you mean Bulford.
Not Bulford, Borden.
Borden.
Yeah.
Was that the normal period of recruit training?
We were a bit different in boys because we didn't do the full recruit training period that the others did. They did, I'm not sure, I think they did something like 2 or 3 months. But we didn't. There was no set time for us.
Now, what happened when you got to Borden? That's near Aldershot?
Yeah.
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 And what happened when you got to Borden Barracks? Who were you joining there?
Well, we went down there as an advance party to get the Guadalupe Barracks ready for the 2nd Battalion coming home from Gibraltar. And we were going to join the 2nd Battalion. I was going to go into the 2nd Battalion band. And some of the boys were going to go into the MT section. But we got there on the Tuesday. On the Wednesday morning we paraded, and four boys were called out and warned for draft to India. So then we were knocked off duties, struck off duties. We had to go and get inoculations, and then you had TAB inoculation, tetanus and TAB. TAB inoculation was 48 hours bed down. You weren't allowed, they had to bring the meals to you and everything, and you had to stay in bed for 48 hours.
What effect did it have on you? I mean, did it
I think it made your arms stiff and sore, but other than that, I never did find. In actual fact, later on when war started, of course, TAB inoculations, you got it and kept going.
And what about kitting out? Did you get tropical kit?
Yes, you got khaki drill issued, but we didn't get that. And we got that issued and then went home on leave. I'm not sure whether I had a fortnight or a month's leave. I think probably a fortnight embarkation leave.
What did your mum and dad think of you going off?
Well, my mum, when I joined up, my mother said, he's not going abroad. And my father said, do you want to go? And I said, yes. And my father said, right, sign there. He's going if he wants to go. I don't know. I suppose I was a bit... colours about it, but
your mum was a bit upset then.
Well, I don't know. She probably was. I don't know. I went off quite happily. I went back. Got back on the Saturday night, and on the following Wednesday, off we went in a train down to Southampton to go on board the.
This would be February, wouldn't it?
Yeah, February. February the 22nd, we went on board the Dorsetshire.
Now, what do you remember of Dorsetshire's quite a well-known troop ship. What do you remember of the voyage? What were the conditions like?
Bloody awful. The one abiding memory I have, well, there are many memories, but the one big memory I have of it is the toilet facilities, which were a tin shack bolted to the foredeck with a trough with seawater swilling up and down it. And I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And when we got into the Red Sea, they put the air conditioning in, which was a twill trunk that hung down into the hold, or into the mess decks. And they had things like a coal scuttle, but they had no back to it. And you pushed it out the porthole, and that got some air into the mess deck. But if you were too near the water, you got a wave instead of the bloody air. So it was...
What were the mess decks like? Can you describe how they were laid
out? Well, it was
it
was an empty deck with tables, long tables. I think they took 14, I think, on a table. 14 or 16 on the table, and they hung on gimbals. And the occupants of that table, there was a place for their hammocks to be hung over the top of it at night. The food, you went up to the cook shack and got in containers and brought down and was issued out at the table. And then there were two people were detailed as mess deck orderlies, and you had to clean the mess deck, the deck up and clean all the stuff and go and get the food and bring it back down again. And
what was the food like? I mean, how did it compare to the barracks?
Oh, it wasn't anything like it was in the barracks. I mean, it was, they wouldn't feed pigs on it now, I don't think, but it was, it seemed as most of us were seasick any blooming way to start off with, it didn't matter what it was like.
how bad did you get seasick?
Oh, I was seasick for about 4 days.
Did it actually make you sick? Or
yeah.
Did you just feel
no, made me sick as a blooming dog. But that was the only time. After that, I was perfectly all right. Once we got down into the Bay of Biscay, and when we sailed, there was a storm in the channel that night, and it was blooming rough. And it was rough down in the Bay of Biscay. But once we got through to Gibraltar, and stopped there, and we had a route march in Gibraltar. You didn't get shore leave, you got a route march, and you had a march around Gibraltar, around the island. But once we got there and through the med, that was all right.
So there was no cure or anything, you didn't stop?
Oh, no.
You just stopped?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they didn't bother much about it.
Were there any duties, I mean, or training on board deck? On board
no, not very little, because there was only four of us. Four boys. There were no one else of the Royal Norfolk Regiment in the draft. There was just us four boys and a second Lieutenant Cooper Key, who'd been with the 2nd Battalion in Gibraltar. And when the 2nd Battalion came home, he stayed in Gibraltar and joined the Dorsetshire when it got there, and he was our drafting officer.
And as you got through and the climate changed, it got very hot below decks, obviously.
Yes, we obviously all changed into khaki drill, shorts and, I don't know, I think our long trousers. But we didn't, we put away our service dress.
Did you have the topi or weren't the issue?
No, we didn't, not then, but we did get topis in, not topis, pith helmets, which were the thick ones. The topi was a cork helmet, which was, we had them in the band, but they were blooming heavy. Was it like wearing a coal scuttle on your blooming head, just about as giving as well.
So, anything happened? It sounds very dull, you didn't have much to do.
Well, no, you sat around on deck and played tombola or Alsi-Alsi, as they used to call it, and it wasn't tombola. There were things like crown and anchor that the real old soldiers used to do and wrap up and dash off when anyone came around, if a ship's officer came along or anything.
Did you actually play? Or
no, you didn't have any money. I mean, our pay was a shilling a day, and you were allowed to draw half a crown a week, so you didn't have money for tombola or anything like that.